This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 177. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, we're going to hear two perspectives about the USDF L Education Program from Marilyn Heath and Renee Carter. And we'll also have part one from an educational series taken from the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention on prohibited substances in feed and supplements. But before we begin, as always, we would like to remind you that the views of the hosts and the guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And before we hear from our first guest, we'd like to let you know that the 2018 USDF Online Stallion Guide has been released. The annual publication provides all the information that dressage breeders need to make a favorable breeding decision this season, including breed statistics from the 2017 USDF Breeders' Championships, the Great American Group USDF Regional Championships, and the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan. That's all in the 2018 USDF Online Stallion Guide, which is now available. Just go to usdf.org for more information. And our first guest this week is Renee Carter, who's here to tell us about her experiences as she graduated with distinction from the USDF L Education Program. And we'll hear what prompted her to do the program in the first place and what she got out of it. Hi, Renee. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us first of all, Renee, why you decided to do the L Program. Did you have ambitions to become a judge one day?
Well, I achieved my life goal of my silver medal in 2015, and I needed a new challenge, and the L program, I had heard good things about it, and I'm always looking to continue my learning, and so the L program to me was just the logical choice.
And what were your expectations then going into the program? Did you have any thoughts and how the people had told you what to expect of this?
You know, I thought I was going to learn to judge, and I've done a lot of scribing, so I'd been with judges a lot, and I kind of knew what the judges were looking for, but the L program offered so much more. It was way more than I expected. It changed the way that I ride. It changed the way that I break down a problem. It's literally changed everything about dressage for me.
Well, that's interesting. Give us some examples then, Renee, of how it has changed your outlook as a rider and as a, potentially as a judge, hopefully, one day. And you mentioned that you were scribing there too. So you have different perspectives.
Right. So as far as my riding, when I incur a problem with my horse, the first thing I do is I start at the bottom of the training pyramid and, I work my way up. So I'm always thinking about, is there rhythm here? And, what is going on? And then I also try to think about what biomechanically could be going wrong that could be causing whatever issue I have. For instance, he's stepping short behind. So is this because he's not off the leg? Is it because there's something wrong with him? So I just go through all of these evaluations. And as far as judging, as I said, I did spend a lot of time scribing. And so I was always familiar with what the judges wanted, but there's actually a methodology behind what the judge is looking for. How do they determine the scores that you receive? And it's all so fascinating how the judges are able to come to a score in such a short period of time.
That's interesting, yes. And so talk a little bit about the program itself then. Walk us through it, if you would, Renee, and what your takeaways were throughout the program.
Well, it's divided up into two parts. The first section is sessions A, B, and C, and it's biomechanics in session A. So you go over all the biomechanics of the horse and very detailed. And what's nice is there's homework assigned to each section, so you're prepared and ready for the class. So you know a little bit about what, you're to expect in that class. And then you also have fantastic paperwork available online that you can read through before your classes so you're prepared. And then in the next sessions, session B, you go over all of the movements and, you know, the criteria of the movements. And then in the last session, you go over the collective marks and further remarks. And so the classroom sessions, you'll also go over like live writing in front of you. That's to prepare you for the second part, which is part two. That consists of D1 and D2 and then your final exam. And so during those sessions, it's judging, you know, sitting there while the judge judges the class, and then your scores are matched up to their scores. And it's live judging, and that's when you take your final exam. So you better be good at D1 and D2 to make sure that you pass the final.
And has this changed or affected in any way your feelings towards becoming a licensed judge now? Has this been a decisive program for you?
Absolutely. I want to go on to the small R. I do need to get a couple more scores, so I'm looking forward to show season to be able to get those scores and enroll in a small R program.
So tell us what the biggest takeaways were from the program altogether then, and maybe there's some messages here to people who are thinking about doing it themselves.
Well, the three things that I took away from it, it's all about the basics. You hear that over and over again in class, basics, 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 and it's the training pyramid. So as I said earlier, when problems arise, I start at the bottom of the pyramid and work my way up, because you're going to find the issue somewhere in that pyramid. The second thing is that the writer position is crucial. The writer's influence causes a lot of the issues during a test, whether it's from tension or, you know, their actual position, improper under lack of understanding of the basics. It usually always comes down to the writer. And then lastly, ride the horse from the back to the front. Always. There's nothing correct about pulling your horse into contact. You have to ride the horse into the contact.
And in terms of, you know, how it's affected your riding, you had said earlier that it really affected everything, the way you looked at things now. What have you been applying to your riding since you did this program, Renee?
Well, we recently got mirrors in our indoor arena, so every time I go by those mirrors, I make sure that I'm in the proper alignment and that I'm sitting even with my weight evenly distributed in the saddle. You know, just looking at all of the terms after the rider's seat and effectiveness, and then their aids. I'm constantly going over those line items, and you can find those on the back of your test.
Right. Exactly. So you've actually applied it then and obviously made it work for you.
You know, it's a huge time commitment, but it's hands down the best decision I've ever made in my equine career. I feel that all trainers should be required to take the program, and everyone should audit it at a minimum. Let's say you don't have the money to go through the whole program, or maybe you don't have the scores for the whole program. Go and audit, because there is such a huge value to the program. As I said, it's a huge time commitment and financial commitment, but what you gain, it far exceeds those things. It's literally the best decision I've made.
Well, now you mentioned earlier, you know, about it being all about the basics. It really is. It always comes down to that pyramid, doesn't it? The foundation of dressage.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Absolutely, it does.
And to that point, of course, we're going to be playing a song that was inspired by you and all about the basics. Let's talk about that. How did that come about? Are you a musician?
I'm not a musician, but I'm just very quick-witted. And so I would hear our instructors say, well, it's all about the basics. And then you would hear the basics. And it just fit very well with Megan Trainor's All About the Bass song. And so the lyrics just popped into my head one after one. And I wrote them down and I had a friend sing the song. So it helped me learn the pyramid, and it helps me remember, you know, all of the requirements of each little foundation of the pyramid. So it's kind of a funny parody song, but it really does help you remember the pyramid.
All right. Well, we will be playing it later on in the program. But so any final thoughts, Renee?
Well, it was definitely an honor to be to graduate with distinction. I don't ever like to do anything half. So I always not that not graduating with distinction is half, but I put my all into it. So it was quite an honor to be awarded with distinction so I can go on to the small R. But as I said before, you know, it's all about the basics. It's all about your position, and it's all about how you ride your horse, and just understand that it's usually the rider's fault.
Yeah, right. Well, there is a strong message, and remember, it's all about the basics. And I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the program, Renee, and again, congratulations with graduating with a distinction from the L Education program, and good luck for the rest of your career.
Thank you so much.
And do stay tuned to the end of the podcast because we will be playing the show out with the song that she referred to, All About the Basics. And to explain further, that graduating with distinction from the L Education program is a prerequisite to entering the USEF Recorded Judge Training Program. So Marilyn Heath will join us now to explain the differences in the USDF L Education program and the USEF Recorded Judge Training program.
I was asked to tell what is the difference between the L program, the USDF L program, and the USEF small R program. First of all, the United States Dressage Federation is all about education, and the L program is all about education. The USEF is more about the licensing process. And the USDF does not license judges, the USEF does. So that's a big difference. Since the USDFL program is all about education, we have opened up the L program some several years ago to anybody, part one, to anybody who is a member, that is any kind of a member of USDF. And programs take up to 30 participants in part one. Auditors are welcome. In the USEF small R program, it is open to 10 candidates at a time, and no auditors are allowed. So that's a huge difference. The L program is divided into two parts, and each part has 3 weekends, so a total of 6 weekends. The small R program is 2 weekends, roughly a year apart. So that's a difference too. The L program has a little bit of homework to go with each session. The small R program has 6 introductory modules that are required before the candidates come to the first weekend, which is an instructional weekend. And the modules are on topics such as rules, para-equestrian, biomechanics, freestyle, and there's a quiz at the end of each one of those. For the L program, all the material is new material. Many participants come with knowledge because they've been competitors, but it's all organized for them, and it's new material, whereas in the small R program, it's a review of the same material. Another difference is, in the L program, there are scribing and sitting requirements, and we have group sitting now. In the small R program, there is group apprentice requirements. Then you come to the final exams, and the final exams are very similar in format in both programs.
And if you're interested in starting the L Education program, you'll find more information on the USDF's education calendar, where there's a list of current programs, or you can email directly lprogram@usdf.org. And a reminder for L program graduates that April 1st is the deadline to submit your completed 2017 continuing education hours. L program graduates are required to complete 8 hours of judge-specific continuing education per year. Graduates who meet this requirement will remain on the USDF website list of L graduates. And of course, if you have any questions regarding this requirement, please contact lprogram@usdf.org. And now this week, we begin a new education series where we'll be sharing excerpts recorded during the education sessions at the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. Part one this week is of prohibited substances in feed and supplements, presented by Eileen Fethian.
This is straight out of the USDF guidelines. Trainers, owners, exhibitors, and their veterinarians are cautioned against the use of medical or medicinal preparations, tonics, paste, blah, 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 including those used topically, the ingredients and quantitative analysis of which are not specifically known, as they might contain a forbidden substance. This is especially true of those containing plant ingredients. I mean, it's down to you to know what you're giving your horse. Know what you're putting in your horse. When you get to the elite levels of the sport, KER has been the official feed provider or nutrition consultant for the Olympic Games since Atlanta in 96. I've been to Athens, London, and spent a whole lot of time in Rio. You have some even stricter guidelines, and you're on the world stage. One of our roles is to work with the teams and national federations and help them understand what they can use, what's going to be available when they get there, how to use it, how to transition their horses, or what they can bring in. The Olympic Games in Rio, I spent an entire weekend going through all the lists of possible feeds and supplements that all of the federations may want to import with their horses because they had to air freight it all with the horses. But we had to submit this list for approval to the authorities in Brazil a month before they ship. Now, you all, if you're familiar with the selection process at all, know that they hadn't picked their teams a month out. So instead of saying, oh, well, we have four or five horses from each team, from each country, it was every horse that might go in every feed that those horses are on and every supplement that they might possibly want to take. I ended up paring that list down to over 1,200 different supplements. That's after I nixed the ones that obviously had prohibited substances. And those were just the ones that I could tell didn't have prohibited stuff on face value and met the requirements to be allowed into Brazil, and that I could find all the things, the information required to import them, and with 450 different feeds. So that was quite an issue, and we helped all of those teams to import those products for those horses. So that's a big headache. When you get to international level competition, whether you're here in the U.S. or overseas, you're under FEI rules. Now, the way that the FEI describes prohibited substances is they categorize them as either banned or controlled medication. So banned substances have no legitimate use in competition horses or have a high potential for abuse. They're not permitted for use in competition at any time. So absolutely none, never, no way. Controlled medication are substances that have therapeutic value or are commonly used in equine medicine. They have the potential to affect performance or be a welfare risk for the horse. And then when you get into the controlled medication, they have further divided them into specified substances and permitted medication, and permitted medications have withdrawal periods required. So caffeine versus bupe. So you've got prohibited substances that are either banned, which are not allowed at all, or controlled, which are specified substances or permitted medications. The specified substances are not less important or less dangerous. It's that they're more likely to have been ingested by the horse for a purpose other than enhancement of performance. For example, through a contaminated food substance. So you're probably not giving your horse caffeine or theobromine to enhance its performance. It's rather that somebody decided that they'd let them have a drink of their Diet Coke, or they spilled their Coke in the bucket that they used to serve feed, and then they just dumped it out and threw feed in there. You know, that's how contamination occurs. Then we have things that, within those specified substances that we're not purposefully feeding our horses, there are naturally occurring prohibited substances. So these are things that can get into feeds without you intending it to happen. And caffeine can actually come not just from you spilling your Coke or coffee or tea, but from feed ingredients being shipped in a container that shipped tea leaves or coffee from South America. Morphine can get into it because of poppies growing in a field of oats in Eastern Europe, France, and the alfalfa field. So there's a range of those. And there are some programs that have been started because different authorities recognize those risks. The British Equestrian Trade Association has developed a naturally occurring prohibited substances, or NOPS code, but this is in the UK. And it's a voluntary program for feed manufacturers and supplement manufacturers, any company, wishing to demonstrate or confirm that they conform to the current best practices to minimize the risk of contamination by NOPS and their feeds, raw materials, and ingredients. So this is basically manufacturers coming together to say, hey, like I said, go to your feed manufacturer and be sure that they're going through processes to minimize this risk. Now, in the U.S., this risk is lower for NOPS contamination because of where we get our raw materials from. In Europe, they will import materials from South America and from Eastern Europe. They're growing poppies for pharmaceutical use in Europe. And seed drift means that you can see poppies growing on roadsides or in horse fields. There was a racehorse trainer that contacted him and said, my horses train on gallops right next door to where they're growing poppies. Is that a problem? For the purpose of this, they divided these substances into three categories: high priority, low priority, and herbal. And herbal ones, they said, are both high or low priority as well. And so the high priority stuff, caffeine, again, the same sort of suspects, caffeine, theobromine. And these are things that come from chocolate, tea, coffee, opium poppies, nightshade, Jimson weed, and then low priority, lupinine, spartine. Lupins are a horse bean or fava bean. It's a feed ingredient used in Europe, Australia, New Zealand. It's a high protein, high fiber product. Bufotenine comes from canary grass, also from toads and toadstools. It's like a psychotropic thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's not something you purposefully put in feeds or supplements. It's something that can get onto them and end up in feeds. And then the herbals, also the high priority. Now, the high priority ones are all FEI banned substances. The low priority ones are controlled substances by the FEI, but that includes things that come from things like devil's claw, willow, meadowsweet, valerian. And what they've done is they have said that there's a risk analysis. So excluded at-risk materials or ingredients have to be excluded from feed due to being at high risk of containing a high priority herbal NOPS or a high priority NOPS contaminant. So basically, they're at risk for containing a prohibited substance. You should not have them in your meal. You should not use those ingredients in your products. And then sensitive at-risk materials, they said, can be used, but with caution. And then they have an A and a B risk. And basically, they're either at high risk for containing a low priority NOPS or at low risk of a high priority NOPS. So either way, it's balanced. And they're saying, we don't really think you should use these, but if you do, take care. And so on the excluded list of ingredients, and KER, through our work with feed manufacturers, is working to educate the network that we work with so that they're aware of this and can make appropriate ingredient decisions. But bakery and cookie products and byproducts and cookie meal. So you've got a feed mill near a bakery. Confectionery waste, those two things were highly used in Pennsylvania when Hershey was getting rid of a lot of byproducts after making chocolate. Think about the Nabisco factory, the cereal factories. Well, they have byproducts that can be used in feeds for other animals. You may not put that in your horse feed, but if you use, you know, the offput from Chips Ahoy cookies in your cattle feed, and it's nice and sweet and high calorie, and it pellets well, and the cows and the pigs like it, that's great. But if it ends up in the horse pee that is horrible. So traded grain screens, coffee and tea products and byproducts, chocolate, herbal raw materials, basically helping them understand what things they shouldn't use in horse feed because of the risk involved with their use. So that was the sensitive A and B list. Now, what we do have risk for in the U.S., rather than naturally occurring prohibited substances, it's more livestock medications. And two of those are ractopamine and zilpaterol. And these are both partitioning agents used for meat animals. And what I mean by partitioning agents is it helps to develop more lean muscle mass in animals. So it helps them bulk up and put on more muscle. So they are not harmful. Unfortunately, not too long ago, we had some dressage riders that came up with positives, both a rider from our Olympic team as well as an under 25 rider. And that caused, you know, a big hurrah. Basically, they were provisionally suspended for 2 months because they found banned substances in their horses. And it was an additive widely used. It was ractopamine. And it was made by Eli Lilly and used by, you know, feed companies. Pretty common in livestock feed manufacturing. And that's used in pigs. But the feed company responded very appropriately, launched an investigation because they found that both of these people were using the same product but on their horses. And they identified that the Progressive Nutrition Soothing Pink gastric supplement was the source of the contamination. So that was being made in a mill that was using this medication for pigs in the same production line as it was producing this other supplement. So they were let off the hook because the company producing this product came forward and said, "Hey guys, our bot bad. Our product was contaminated. They did not use this knowingly or purposefully, and so they were able to overcome those charges." But let me tell you, their hearts would have stopped. Certainly, just the fact that they were caught with a banned substance in their horse is horribly embarrassing and damaging to their reputation. My heart goes out to them. Another one that happened. Zilpaterol is added to cattle feeds and often cattle feedlots, and we had some experience with this, and as did many others. A lot of it limited to the West Coast, and a molasses supplier had two different production lines, and one of them was medicated and one of them was non-medicated, you know, basically just molasses and molasses with some other additives. And apparently the weather got cold and a pump went down on one of the lines, and so they rerouted how some of this flowed, and somehow it ended up going through some of the plumbing, for lack of a better term, that the medicated molasses had gone through. And so the non-medicated molasses that went to these horse feed companies ended up contaminated with zilpaterol. And that affected a huge number of horses, racing and sport horses. And it was so widespread, and they found where the contamination was, that basically the government authorities, you know, let everybody that had a positive off the hook. But, I mean, it was a huge, huge issue. All I'm trying to say is just be aware of what's in your barn.
And that's our show for this week. As always, remind you there are more educational resources and information on the website under eTrack. You can also keep up to date on when the latest episode of the podcast is available by following us on social media. And don't forget, if you're listening to this on the website, you can also take it with you by downloading it from iTunes to your podcast player. And playing us out of the show this week is Renee Carter's version of All About the Basics.
I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics. Yeah, it's pretty clear. I ride dressage, fool. Some think that they can fake it. I'm saying that's old school. Cause I've got uphill balance and improved straightness. All the right thrust and all the right paces. I read the magazines about having energy. I know that connection ain't real. Come on, his swing is blocked. If you've got downhill balance, just raise him up. You've got to know that pyramid from the bottom to the top. My trainer, she told me at second level. level dressage. You need to know about collection to do a good job. Follow the training scale if you care at all. So if that's what you do, then you'll be a ribbon hog. Because you know I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics. I'm bringing thoroughness back with energy and steady tempo, yeah. No, I'm not playing. You think that's contact? But I'm here to tell you, got to know that pyramid from the bottom to the top. My trainer, she told me a second level dressage. You need to know about collection to do a good job. Follow the training scale if you care at all. So if that's what you do, then you'll be a ribbon hog. Because you know I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics. Because you know I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics. Because you know I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics at all levels. I'm all about the basics.